My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
Traditional revenue sources for public media, and really the media at large, are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to these trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We are tightening up expenses, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever. We can't cut back on our mission, so we are turning to listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't yet given, now is the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
There's concern over how much AI could interfere with global elections. Hello, thanks for tuning in to the Marketplace Morning Report, and we're live from the BBC World Service. I'm Leanna Byrne. Good morning. There's a lot of elections going on all around the world this year, and there's going to be votes in the US, in Europe and the UK. And this week, the European Union actually started looking into how Meta handles political content. Now, one of Britain's top computer scientists has warned it's too late to prevent artificial intelligence from being misused to influence voters. The BBC's Zoe Kleinman has the details.
Tech companies have spent a long time playing cat and mouse with creators and spreaders of disinformation aimed at influencing elections. But advances in AI technology means that fake content is becoming a lot more realistic. Meta, which owns Facebook and Instagram, now requires genuine political ads to be labelled if they're created or altered using AI tools. But Professor Dame Wendy Hall says there's not enough time to successfully block fake material before this year's elections.
Zoe Kleinman there. So what can be done to limit the impact of AI on politics? Here's Professor Wendy Hall.
I think we need a lot of public awareness around this. And I know the media are thinking about this, is to make people think about where have they got this information from? What's the provenance of this information? Because we can't bring, there's no time to change laws or bring in big technical fixes before these elections start happening now.
Professor Wendy Hall. Now let's switch it up and do the numbers. Earnings for the oil giant Shell fell by a fifth to $7.7 billion, but on the flip side, it also beat expectations, so not all bad news for Shell. European stocks are down after the Fed said that interest rates are staying high. Meanwhile, the yen is strengthening because analysts are suspecting that the Japanese government is going to intervene to prop up the currency. The electric vehicle industry is a tough one to be in right now. Tesla is firing its global supercharger network team. Profits of the electric vehicle giant BYD dropped, and allegations are flying as the US and Europe accuse China of unfair support for its EV market. But despite all of this, at the Beijing Auto Show this week, the mood is optimistic, as the BBC's Steve McDonnell found out.
China's electric vehicle industry is showing off what it can do at the Beijing Auto Show. You can ask a car to find a restaurant for you nearby. And flashy on-screen displays offer movies to watch while you're parked and waiting to pick up someone. There are charging stations boasting 500 kilometres or 310 miles of driving after just 12 minutes plugged in, and established international brands like Mercedes, Buick, Ford and Volkswagen are also taking on this country's many new players here, sometimes in partnership with Chinese companies. Chinese companies have invested heavily in the development of electric vehicles, building huge new factories and the like, and they are going to require export revenue to make their money back. Many won't make it because the competition is just so fierce. But the upside for them is that they can always fall back on a significant domestic market, which is only getting bigger as more and more people make the switch away from traditional to electric vehicles. from the Beijing Auto Show. I'm the BBC's Stephen McDonnell for Marketplace.
Now, if you've got a taste for chocolate like me, you might have been intrigued by these stories and the price of cocoa. At first, it was up at record levels, but then traders were left with a bitter taste after prices plummeted. I asked Paul Jules, commodity analyst of Rabobank in London, to explain. Hi, Paul.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Can you just remind us why cocoa prices went up in the first place?
Yeah, of course. So we've really seen this long drawn out rally, which really began at the start of last year. And effectively, this is a supply driven rally. So we've seen several systemic issues take place in West Africa. And in Ivory Coast and Ghana, we have 60% of global cocoa production. And really one of the key drivers here is that farmers aren't receiving a high enough price to incentivize more production. So what we have in those two countries is a set fixed farm gate price by the government. So as a result, farmers aren't exposed to the higher terminal prices that we have been seeing. So we're not seeing the same production side response. Meanwhile, we've also been seeing a number of crop issues such as aging trees, and disease has also been very bad this year.
But then interestingly, we've just seen this huge drop in prices. What's happened?
Past couple of days, we've seen these massive drops. So on Monday, we had about a 20% drop. We saw a further decline the following day. And really what we began to see is much more volatility within these commodity markets. And that's really a comment of the fact that we've got to these extremely high prices. Let's remember, just for instance, that the prior highest price was back in 1977, and we're more or less double that already, just to give you an idea of the amount of volatility currently in the market. And also what we began to see is open interest in these futures markets. So effectively, liquidity has began to reduce. And what that can mean is when you lose that liquidity is you see much more volatility. So you can see huge price swings one way or the other.
Yeah, exactly, Paul. Would you be expecting another swing the other way? Because all the problems that exist in terms of the supply chain issues, that's still there, isn't it?
Exactly. We can't really attribute those big declines to any fundamental reasoning. We did have some more rainfall in West Africa, but that certainly doesn't explain, a 20-30% decline. So likely we're going to see more big price swings one way or the other. Potentially we could have a little bit of a recovery from these levels. We can't really attribute this to fundamentals.
Have those cocoa prices translated to the consumer yet that we're paying more for our chocolate?
So it is starting. We are seeing an increase in supermarkets already. It's varying by region. We're seeing less sales, for instance, and we're also seeing a change in offering at the supermarkets. For example, what we're seeing is maybe less white chocolate and less dark chocolate, which can have higher cocoa content or higher butter content, cocoa butter content, which is also very expensive. So we're seeing tactics by these big chocolate companies in order to absorb these costs and pass them on to the consumer already. We're going to continue to see more of that and to a higher extent later in the year for sure. So we're seeing it already, but the worst is still yet to come.
Paul Jules from Rabobank, thank you so much for joining us on Marketplace.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And that's it from the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. My producer today is Naomi Rainey. Joe Critcher is our editor. And I'm Leanna Byrne. Have a great day and thanks for listening.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.